you.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayen. Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 19, Text 32. That is page 390 in this edition, or 391. Okay, we're all set. We have several verses and purports to read this morning, so I'd like to just begin by reading the translation and purports one by one, then we'll chant the final verse. So, again, we're starting on text 32, translation by Srila Prabhupada. The fortunate King Parikshit said, O Brahman, who's he referring to? Shukadeva Goswami. By your mercy only, you have sanctified us, making us like unto places of pilgrimage, all by your presence here as my guest. By your mercy, we, who are but unworthy royalty, become eligible to serve the devotee. Does this remind anyone of another person who's mentioned as a Tirtha? Uddhava. No, Vidura. Vidura. Tirtha, Kurvanti Tirthani, right? From the, 13th chapter. Okay, so purport, please. Please read. Is it not working? Is it on?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me in the kitchen?
Okay.
Saintly devotees like Sukadeva Goswami generally do not approach worldly enjoyers, especially those in royal orders. Maharaj Prataparudra was a follower of Lord Chaitanya, but when he wanted to see the Lord refused to see him because he was a king. For a devotee who desires to go back to Godhead, two things are strictly prohibited, worldly enjoyers and women. Therefore, devotees of the standard of Sukadeva Goswami are never interested in seeing kings. Maharaj Parikshit was, of course, a different case. He was a great devotee, although a king, and therefore Sukadeva Goswami came to see him in his last stage of life. Maharaj Parikshit, out of his devotional humility, felt himself an unworthy descendant of his great Kshatriya forefathers. Although he was as great as his predecessors, the unworthy sons of the royal orders are called
Chhatra.
Chhatra Bandavas. As the unworthy sons of the Brahmin are called Bija Bandhus, or Brahmana Bandhus, Brahma Bandhus. Maharaj Parikshit was greatly encouraged by the presence of Supadeva Goswami. He felt himself sanctified by the presence of the great saint, whose presence turns any place into a place of pilgrimage.
Okay. I'd like to just comment on this briefly. You know, Krishna is known as Sad Aishwarya Purna. What does that mean? Yes, he has full and all six opulences, which are wealth, strength, beauty, intelligence, fame, and renunciation. So when Lord Chaitanya was approached by the devotees, Maharaj Prataparudra wants to see you, the king of Orissa, who was a very powerful king and had managed to keep the Muslims out of his state. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, how can I see a king? He's a worldly man. So the king begged the devotees, please, try again. They tried again. He said, if you ask me again, I'm just going to leave. And the king had told them that, okay, I can't see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm going to renounce my kingdom, I'm going to put in an ivory earring and go out and beg. So he was just going to walk away from his kingdom because he couldn't see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So it was Swarup Damodar, I believe, who devised a plan. Just dress as a mendicant and meet the Lord after the Rath Yatra and massage his feet. And he'll think that, and that way you can approach him. In other words, he would accept him as a mendicant or as a peasant, basically, but not as a king. So Maharaj Pratiparudra did this and he chanted one verse, Tapta Jivanam, Nivritta. Tavakatamritam Tapta Jivanam. Yes, that the great souls who chant the glories of Krishna are the most munificent welfare workers. He chanted this verse from the 10th canto. And when Lord Chaitanya heard this, as he said, oh, you are the most munificent. So this is how, by renouncing, by putting himself in a position of renunciation, he was accepted by the Lord. So what was Krishna's exhibition of renunciation, his famous exhibition? Yes, when he was alone at night with all these beautiful gopis and they became proud and he just left. So I was trying to think of contemporary examples. There are all the other opulences are easily appreciated by everybody. Beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, but renunciation. So I could only think of one. Can anyone think of an example of somebody who has been appreciated widely because of the renunciation? Somebody in the modern age. Gandhi, yes, that was an example.
I kind of think of rock stars sometimes because they're always traveling, they're always on the road.
Yeah, this is hard to reconcile the rock star life. Warren Buffett, that's a good example. And Bill Gates also. These are two of the wealthiest men in America who dedicated huge amounts of their accumulated wealth to charitable causes. What's that? There was one other example. This is a minor example, but there was one industrialist who sold his business when he retired for $65 million. And instead of just leaving like that, he divided up almost all of the proceeds. He kept maybe $2 million and he divided up all the rest among his employees. So they've actually earned the wealth. And so he gave them proportionately to the amount of years they'd worked for the company. He gave them these huge retirement packages. So this was a minor case, and he didn't make any publicity about it, but somehow the media learned about it and held him up. Here's an example of somebody who really cares. So yes, generally, though, these people make sure to take care of themselves. They don't actually renounce everything, the Warren Buffetts of the world. And in this case, Maharaj Parikshit has left everything. He has completely abandoned all of his opulence because he knows the purpose of life. Therefore, he welcomes the saint. He's very happy to see him. Let's go on to the next verse. Any other questions, comments?
Prabhuji?
Yeah, Jack Kerouac, right? Hit the road. Yes. I'm sorry, what is it? That's also a good example. Yeah, soldiers who fight for the country. Yeah. Okay.
X23.
Is it working? Okay.
Simply by our remembering you, our houses become instantly sanctified. And what to speak of seeing you, touching you, washing your holy feet, and offering you a seat in our home. Okay. The importance of holy places of pilgrimage is due to the presence of great sages and saints. It is said that sinful persons go to the holy places and leave their sins there to accumulate. The presence of the great saints disinfects the accumulated sins, and thus the holy places continue to remain sanctified by the grace of the devotees and saints present there. If such saints appear in the holy in the homes of worldly people, certainly the accumulated sins of such worldly enjoyments become neutralized.
Therefore, the holy saints actually have no self-interest with the householders. The only aim of such saints is to sanctify the houses of the householders, and the householders therefore should feel grateful when such saints and sages appear at their doors. A householder who dishonors such holy orders is a great offender. It is enjoined, therefore, that a householder who does not bow down before a saint at once must undergo fasting for the day in order to neutralize the great offense.
Uh-huh. So this is the relationship between the grihasthas and the sannyasis, generally. You remember this symptom of Kali Yuga that Bhima was asked about? He had to go to Yudhisthira to explain. This man came to Bhima and said, I saw an elephant walk through the eye of a needle, but then his tail got caught on the end. He couldn't get through. The entire elephant passed through, but the tail got caught on the end. So what does this mean? And Yudhisthira said, this is a symptom of Kali Yuga. Anyone remember what that is? No, that's a different one. Yeah. Not quite. The example is that the rich man can give any amount of money for any purpose. But when the holy person comes and says, can you give a donation? He says, oh, I have no money. Ah, okay. Well, it's Mahabharata. It's not Bhagavatam. So anyway, this is at least one of the explanations. Huh? That the rich person can spend any amount of money for the wedding, for the party, for the big car, for the renovations. But if somebody comes to say, can you give some money for the renunciate? Oh, no, I cannot give. So the elephant can pass through, but the tail gets caught. So, have you ever seen this, Shashi? So, when somebody is doing something nice for you and you don't appreciate it, that's called being a teenager, right? Is that right? If somebody's been kind to you, facilitating you, extending themselves for you, and you treat them poorly, this is the most offensive and sinful thing. Not to show respect. Like the radio host in San Diego who was famous for chopping down his guests, he invited Badri Narayan Prabhu. You know the story? So he, when they went on the air, Badri was all prepared to, you know, defend ISKCON and so forth. But the man just asked nice questions, one after the next. And then when the commercial was on and they were off air, he said, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth, but how come you're being so nice to me? And the man said, when I was at the University of Florida, I ate your lunch there every day. And my mother taught me never bite the hand that feeds you. So, this is culture. This is courtesy. And if somebody is kind to you and then you offend them, then it is a great offense. So the idea is that saintly persons come, they renounce everything, and therefore they're wards of society. They are dependents on society. This is the actual meaning of sannyas. I am going to, without any provision for my maintenance, and I'm going to share spirituality with society, and I'll depend on God to be maintained. So for a householder, wealthy householder, to treat such a person as a beggar This is described, and Prabhupada describes this, that the householder thinks, oh, I am rich, and the saintly person, this so-called saint, is coming to me begging, so I'll give him some charity, and therefore I am better than the saintly person. He is dependent on me. This is the attitude in Kali Yuga. So Parikshit Maharaj is showing, he's saying, we royalty are unworthy of receiving you, but you're so kind that you've come anyway. So this is the proper attitude for receiving a saintly person. And there's a great dearth of saintly persons in this world. Yeah, so it's a tough gig in Kali Yuga, but as Rabindra Sarup put it, Srila Prabhupada came to the lower east side of Manhattan and showed that sainthood was a viable career option. Okay, any other comments before we move on? Who's next, please?
Just as the atheist cannot remain in the presence of the personality of Godhead, so also the invulnerable sins of man are immediately vanquished in the presence of Saint Godhead. Purport. There are two classes of human beings, namely the atheist and the devotees of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, because of manifesting godly qualities, is called a demigod, whereas the atheist is called a demon. The demon cannot stand the presence of Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. The demons are always busy in trying to vanquish the personality of Godhead. But factually, as soon as the personality of Godhead appears, by either his transcendental name, form, attributes, pastime, paraphernalia, or variegatedness, the demon is at once vanquished. It is said that a ghost cannot remain as soon as the holy name of the Lord is chanted.
Great saints and devotees of the Lord are in the list of his paraphernalia, and thus as soon as a saintly devotee is present, the ghostly sins are at once vanquished. That is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. One is recommended, therefore, associate only with saintly devotees, so that worldly demons and ghosts cannot exert their sins to be cleansed.
Please read on.
Lord Krishna, personality of Godhead, who is very dear to the sons of King Pandu, accepted me as one of those relatives just to please his great cousins and brothers. The pure and exclusive devotee of the Lord serves his family interests more dexterously than others. Were attached to illusory family affairs. Generally, people are attached to family matters, and the whole economic impetus of human society is moving under the influence of family affection. Such deluded persons have no information that one can render better service to the family by becoming a devotee of the Lord. The Lord gives special protection to the family members and descendants of the devotee, even though such members are themselves non-devotees. Maharaj Prahlad was a great devotee of the Lord, but his father, Hiranyakashipu, was a great atheist and declared enemy of the Lord. Despite all this, Hiranyakashipu was awarded salvation due to his being the father of Maharaj Prahlad. The Lord is so kind that he gives all protection to family members of his devotee, and thus the devotee has no need to bother about his family members, even if one leaves such family members aside to discharge devotional service. Maharaj Yudhisthira and his brothers were the sons of Kunti, the paternal aunt of Lord Krishna, and Maharaj Pariksit, the midst of the patronage of Lord Krishna, because of his being the only grandson of the great Pandu.
One of my godbrothers told his father when he moved into the temple, he said, Dad, I'm just doing this for you. His father did not appreciate it, but... Okay, any comments, questions on this? Next verse, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Yes. Right. That's a very interesting point. You know, I have an editor friend who said that exclamation marks are greatly overused. So you want to restrain yourself from their use until you really want to exclaim something. And I appreciated that point also. So he's amazing. He's saying it's so amazing, even in the non-devotee, is the Lord is kind even to the non-devotee in the family by the grace of the Lord. The Chanakyapani gives the example of a sandalwood tree in a forest. One sandalwood tree will make the entire forest very fragrant. So in the same way, one devotee in a family, even a demoniac family, makes everybody blessed. Okay? Next verse, please.
Otherwise, without being inspired by Lord Krishna, how is it that you have voluntarily appeared here, although you are moving incognito to the common man and not visible to us, who are on the verge of death?
The great sage Shukadeva Goswami was certainly inspired by Lord Krishna to appear voluntarily before Maharaj Pariksit, great devotee of the Lord, just to give him the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the nucleus of devotional service of the Lord by the mercy of the spiritual master and the personality of God. The spiritual master is the manifested representative of the Lord to help one achieve ultimate success. One who is not authorized by the Lord cannot become a spiritual master. Srila Shukadeva Goswami is an authorized spiritual master, and thus he was inspired by the Lord to appear before Maharaj Pariksit and instruct him in the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam. One can achieve the ultimate success of going back to Godhead if he is favored by the Lord, sending his true representative. As soon as a true representative of the Lord is met by a devotee of the Lord, the devotee is assured a guarantee for going back to Godhead just after leaving the present body. This, however, depends on the sincerity of the devotee himself. The Lord is seated in the heart of all living beings, and thus he knows very well the movements of all individual persons. As soon as the Lord finds that a particular soul is very eager to go back to Godhead, the Lord at once sends his bona fide representative. The sincere devotee is thus assured by the Lord of going back to Godhead. The conclusion is that to get the assistance and help of a bona fide spiritual master means to receive the direct help of the Lord himself.
So in this case, Maharaj Pariksit is getting, all of these great sages are present, but he's specifically getting instructions from Shukadeva Goswami. You know, in India, they cook on cow dung. Most of the common people cook on cow dung fires. Anyone know why? Daniel? It's got good heat, and it also repels bugs, that's true, but... Yes, it burns very evenly. Yeah, right. Good heat. Yes. In other words, other fuels will flare up and then flare out, but cow dung burns very slowly and evenly, so it's excellent for cooking. So, how does one become a spiritual master? It's very much like cow dung. Just have to burn slowly and evenly for an extended period of time, and not think how I'm going to immediately storm the kingdom of God. You know? In other words, it is not, as Prabhupada put it, it is not surprising who leaves Krishna consciousness, it's surprising who stays. So don't be surprised if someone leaves, be surprised if somebody stays. So all we need to do is stay in Krishna consciousness and we'll become spiritual masters. Many people will take shelter, just like a tree has to be protected at the roots when it's a sapling. But when it gets big, then it can give shelter to many. So there's really not that much mystery to becoming a representative of the Lord, as Prabhupada writes about here. He talks about the devotee and the representative of the Lord. What's the difference? The difference really is just time and purification. And it does take time to become purified. And in order to stay in Krishna consciousness, we have to be real people. We have to acknowledge the actual needs and foibles of our lives. If we are trying to artificially be on a platform that is beyond our realization and beyond our actual understanding, then we can't sustain it. See? So therefore, cow dung. It's not a glorious well, I guess it is in a way a glorious substance, but dung in general. It's not the glorious substance, but it burns very evenly. So any questions or comments on this? I have a comment for the kitchen. The clocks are 5 minutes fast, both of them. So maybe somebody could set them ahead so we could be synchronized with the rest of the world. Okay, thanks. Any comments on this? Questions? Okay. Next verse.
Verse 37. You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, especially for one who is with one, for one who is about to die.
Unless one is perfectly anxious to inquire about the way of perfection, there is no necessity of approaching the spiritual master.
Is that on? I'm not sure if it is really on. Okay. It's time. Okay.
A spiritual master is not a kind of decoration for a householder. Generally, a fashionable materialist engages a so-called spiritual master, not any prophet. A pseudo-spiritual master flatters the so-called disciple, and thereby both the master and his ward go to hell without a doubt. Maharaj Parikshit is the right type of disciple because he puts forward questions vital to the interests of all men, particularly for the dying men. The question put forward by Maharaj Parikshit is the basic principle of the complete thesis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now let us see how intelligently the great master is.
Okay. So,
man should hear, chant, remember, and worship, and also what he should not do. Please explain all this to me.
Who's next?
O powerful Brahman, it is said that you hardly stay in the houses of men long enough to milk a cow. Purport. Saints and sages in the renounced order of life go to the houses of the householders at the time they milk the cows, early in the morning, and ask some quality milk for subsistence. A pound of milk fresh from the milk bag of a cow is sufficient to feed an adult with all vitamin values, and therefore saints and sages live only on milk. Even the poorest of the householders keep at least 10 cows, each delivering 12 to 20 quarts of milk, and therefore no one hesitates to spare a few pounds of milk for the mendicants.
It is the duty of householder to maintain the saints and sages like the children. So a saint like Sukadeva Goswami, who would hardly stay at the house of a householder for more than 5 minutes in the morning. In other words, such saints are very rarely seen in the houses of householders, and Maharaj Parikshit therefore prayed to him to instruct him as soon as possible. The householder also should be intelligent enough to get some transcendental information from visiting sages. The householder should not foolishly ask a saint to deliver what is available in the market. There should be the reciprocal relation between the saints and the householders.
Sri Sutta Goswami said, the king thus spoke and questioned the sage, using sweet language. Then the great and powerful personality, the son of Vyasadeva, who knew the principles of religion, began his reply. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 19th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled, Appearance of Sukadeva Goswami.
And Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Congratulations, everyone. So as a dramatic story, this doesn't have, superficially, does not have a great plot, does it? I mean, here's the culmination of the first canto, and two men are about to sit down and have a talk. If you hadn't seen the prequel to all of this, it would be kind of boring. But in fact, who are these two personalities? So we really don't hear much about Sukadeva Goswami until this last chapter, and even then, not much more. In the whole first canto, he's only mentioned 3 times in any detail. First, when the sages just say this. They know, the sages at Namishiranya know that Shukadeva left home without taking his Brahman thread. They just mention that. And then later, Sutta describes in more detail how Vyasadeva saw his son leaving and cried after him very plaintively, please come back, come back. And the cries of the father simply echoed in the forest because the son did not return. What's that?
Teenager,
yes. So the description is then given how Shukadeva went past the ladies who were taking bath, and the ladies didn't even notice him. But when his father, Vyas, came behind him, they all covered up and felt quite shy. So this is very common in the rural India, that there'll be a ladies' bathing place and a men's bathing place, and also a place on the river for passing stool. This is just one designated place for all these things. So it's all one. It's a different life, Clayton. You have to see it for yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do. For each particular village. And the ones downstream, they get what they get. But the point is that Vyasadeva saw this. So when he went past the ladies' bathing place following his son, he noted, he had seen the ladies didn't respond to his son, who was a young man. He's an old man. And so he asked them, why didn't you feel shy when my son came by? And they said, oh, he's completely off the bodily platform, which is a stage you haven't quite yet attained. So this is Vyas, the author of Srimad Bhagavatam. And just so we can see how Shukadeva is so elevated. You remember that Shukadeva is given as an example of this famous Atmarama verse from the first canto. Where was that verse found? Does anyone recall? No, I mean in the first canto. Fifth or sixth chapter? Seventh chapter. 17, very good. And Atmaramas Chamunayo. Clayton has a memory like a steel trap. Oh, is that right? And translation? All different varieties of Atmaramas. Those who take pleasure in Atma or spirit self. Especially those established on the path of self-realization. Feel free from all kinds of material bondage. Desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. So Shukadeva Goswami was liberated in the womb of his mother, and therefore he saw no need to go out. Why should I do any? Why should I risk getting entangled in the material world? So he stayed there for 16 years, much to the chagrin of his mother. And when his father then recited Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva heard about Krishna, then he came out. But he didn't stay around for any of the formalities of family life. He just left. So this verse is spoken that even the self-realized person becomes attracted to the pastimes of Krishna because Krishna's qualities are so unique. And there are many examples of impersonalists such as Sukadeva or the four Kumaras becoming devotees, but there are no examples of devotees becoming impersonalists. So renunciation is one of the goals of the impersonalist. Somebody might be very renounced, but they have no taste for Krishna. So therefore, they cannot stay on that platform. See, Prabhupada compared them to cockroaches in the commode. They crawl up the sides, but they come back down. So, aruya krishchena param padam tata patantyadho. Because there's no taste for hearing about Krishna, they cannot maintain that position. Has anyone heard of Jane Goodall, the monkey lady that lived with the chimps? Yeah, so she's very much a mode of goodness person who promotes vegetarianism and sensitivity to the environment and so forth. But she doesn't believe in God. And the reason she doesn't believe in God is because she doesn't know who he is. So this is a case in point. There are people with good qualities of renunciation, but without knowledge of Krishna. So we can appreciate the good qualities of others. We don't have to be sectarian. But at the same time, it is it's just a simple fact. If you don't know who God is, how can you love him? If you don't know who God is, how can you actually have a taste for his service or know him in any respect? See? So we appreciate everybody's good qualities, but we also are discriminant to say, if you don't understand Krishna, then how can you have real knowledge of God? Sukadeva is an example of this. He hesitated to engage until he heard about Krishna. Then he was ready to change. This is why when a woman is pregnant, a Vaishnavi is pregnant, then she reads the Bhagavatam out loud. So the child in the womb will become attracted and come out. So this is an old custom. So this is Shukadeva. Shukadeva didn't even bother to get a sacred thread. He didn't even bother to get dressed. He was clothed, as they say, by the four directions. And yet, when he walked past the women, they didn't even think anything of it. So when Vyasadeva walked past, who was fully clothed, they all became embarrassed. So Shukadeva then just wandered around, taking milk at various householders' houses, never staying more than three minutes, the time it takes to milk a cow. And he would distribute spiritual knowledge. And in this culture, people respected and appreciated that. So it's become a karmakanda thing, a pious deed to feed the mendicants in contemporary India. You invest some money in food and give it to the renunciates, and then you get a big return on investment. This is the idea. It is considered that, yes, you will get so much wealth and so much opulence if you feed the poor. And then people will professionally become poor in order to be fed. Right? As Prabhupada said, that the Mayavadi sannyasis exhibit renunciation, and they beg chapatis. And as he said, there are many sannyasis for every chapati. So their renunciation is incomplete, and the purpose of giving charity is also incomplete. This is Kali Yuga. See, we're looking at a very pristine example in Shukadeva of how people feed a saintly person in order to become blessed spiritually. And that's their only motivation. So this Kali Yuga is such a sad age, degraded age, that people don't appreciate what devotees have to offer. If you become a devotee of Krishna in Kali Yuga, then people think that generally you've got some kind of psychological problem, or you have some kind of frustration. All these things are cataloged by Madhavendra Puri. He said, since I've become a devotee, my family thinks I'm mad, my friends think I'm frustrated, wise philosophers think I'm puffed up, because I think I know everything, and basically everyone is criticizing me. And why do they criticize when somebody becomes a devotee? Envy? Okay, or? It's against what they're doing, yes. Prabhupada says when they see a devotee, they see death personified. Estefania. They don't understand. Oh, that's always wise advice. Yes, ready, fire, aim. Just start criticizing before we understand, yes. They're seeing you give up sense gratification. They don't want to give up their sense gratification. Therefore, it's an immediate threat, especially if you look happy. You know? Daniel? Fear of the unknown? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes, fear of change. And yet, change is inevitable, right? So this is Maharaj Pariksha. It's a very intelligent question. I'm going to die. Please tell me what I should do. So instead of being afraid of a saintly person, see, an intelligent person will inquire, at least try to understand. But it's very rare, right? Manusyanam sahasreshu kastid yatati siddhaye. Hardly one out of millions will ask about perfection. How many times in your life as a devotee has somebody come up to you and said, could you please explain what you're all about? You know? Not too often, huh? Once in a while, it will happen. Very intelligent person will do that. But it's rare. Generally, they would just, at best, smile politely. Well, they're clearly thinking behind their smile, what the hell? You know, what? They cannot understand. So this is a austerity in and of itself, just being a devotee in regular society, isn't it? Have you experienced that? It's immediately, you're renouncing conformity, the comfort of the mass. You are staking out a very clear position that I am against materialism. I am not just going to go along with the flow, and I'm going to question all kinds of things that people take for granted. So that's a big commitment, and people are naturally a little intimidated by it. So if people are intimidated by our position, what is an intelligent way to respond? If you're intimidating somebody, even unintentionally, what can you do? No. If you are, by your very existence, intimidating or making someone uncomfortable. Chaitanya? This is a verse by Prabodhananda Saraswati. Yes, you flatter them 10 times. Oh, you are a great king. You are so wise. Now, please forget everything you know and try to understand the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's very good. If we come in with both guns blazing and say, yes, I'm a devotee and you're going to hell and this is why, obviously this does not endear us to anybody. Thus, the Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Krishna Das Kaviraj says, that the principles of religion are spread not by argument and debate, but by the behavior of the devotees. This is why the sages could immediately recognize Sukadeva Goswami as soon as he came into the assembly. See, ordinarily, in an assembly of learned persons, there's a great competition. Tamal Krishna Maharaj said this about, he was a GBC member for many years, then he entered academia. And he said, I used to think that the GBC meetings were intense until I went to these academic conferences. See? So there's great competition. Why? Because the stakes are so low. That's what they say about academics. They're very competitive about who knows more and who's got the right idea and who's more advanced because the stakes are so low. In other words, there's a very little amount of money available in the field. So they have to be very competitive to try to get it. It's not that, for example, there are many, many jobs in religious studies. If you graduate with a degree in religious studies, there are so many places just begging for you to come and work for them. On the contrary, there's just a few positions available. So only the very, very best academics will get those positions. So they're very competitive. See? And just the opposite is true in spiritual life. These sages were not competing. Oh, Shukadeva Goswami thinks he's more advanced than me. I should be speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. There's not even a whiff of that. You know, they all recognize Shukadeva is the most elevated. Even though he's younger, his father is present. You know, even his own father is present. And they all acquiesce. He is the qualified person to speak to Maharaj Pariksit. So they welcome him, they seat him on the Vyas Asana, the seat named after his own father. So this is spiritual life. We're not trying to be the most advanced devotee, unless we're in which mode? Passion, right? In the third canto, Lord Kapila Dev gives a beautiful description of devotional service in the modes of nature. And there are, of course, there's devotional service in the mode of passion, goodness, and ignorance. In the mode of goodness, one does everything just right because it should be done. And in the mode of passion, one thinks, I'm the best devotee. And in the mode of ignorance, one thinks, I just want to serve Krishna by myself. I don't want to be around all these other devotees. This is the mode of ignorance, separation, thinking that somehow it's just me and Krishna, and I don't want to deal with all these other personalities. Okay? That doesn't work. So goodness, passion, and ignorance still influence our lives as devotees to a certain extent. So we should at least be aware of these things. If we have these desires, recognize their origins. What is the transcendental position of devotional service as defined by Rupa Goswami? Anya bilasita shunyam jnana kamad yana vritam anukulena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. All right, pure devotional service is untinged by any kind of desire for fruitive gain or for academic knowledge, etc. All right, thank you very much. Let's, Clayton, could you take the mic, please? Pass the mic down.
So, imperfect devotional service that's still tainted by the three modes of nature, you said? Devotional service tainted by the three modes. Devotional service in the mode of ignorance, one, his desire is just to try to be by himself in devotional service and think that he can just serve Krishna alone.
Right.
The desire in the mode of passion is to try and be the best devotee, to be recognized by others as such. And then, but what's the specific desire in devotional service in Sattva Guna?
It means that I'm just doing everything so perfectly. Let's see, it's kind of like Niyamagraha, following the rules and regulations blindly, not for the sake of spiritual advancement.
Okay. That kind of seems to me like the mode of passion also.
Mode of passion, yeah.
That also seems to me like the mode of influenced by mode of passion.
Yeah,
I thought the mode of goodness was characterized by one who recognizes the spiritual reality of existence and who is patient.
Well, see.
That's
a little more like mode of passion. It's a subtle distinction, but it's more like just enjoying being so pure. See? That is separate from the desire to please Krishna. Do you see? Like when Krishna had a headache, and he said, the only thing that can cure me is the dust of my devotees' feet. And all the sages refused, but the gopis agreed. So they're considered the greatest devotees. And Narada asked them, aren't you afraid of going to hell, putting the dust of your feet on Krishna's head? And they said, yes, let us go to hell. Krishna needs a cure for his headache. So the mode of goodness is more like that. It's more concerned with one's own self-realization. It's a tinge of impersonalism. It's about me. It's not about Krishna. So sometimes to do things for Krishna, we have to be in the mode of passion, right? Could you make the tea every day all semester, Clayton, without being in the mode of passion? That's right. So that's a little, that I hope it gives you a little insight into the contamination of the mode of goodness. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that a mode of goodness is characterized by attachment to a sense of being happy. That's its downfall. Conditions one to the concept of happiness.